Happy Thanksgiving, everybody. I'm Dan Horde, and thanks for downloading the Bengals Booth Podcast. We just want to give gratitude. Yeah. Addition? That's an Earth, Wind, and Fire song, in case you're interested, as we take a quick break from football and gluttony to discuss the latest Bengals news and look ahead to Sunday's game against the Giants. Coming up, Dave Lapham joins me to discuss the rehab process for Joe Burrow and who will start in his place this week. My one-on-one player interview this week is with CJ Uzama, who knows all about rehab after tearing his Achilles in week two. He looks forward to pushing and being pushed by Joe Burrow in the months to come. And in our Know the Foe segment, we'll get the scoop on the 3-7 Giants from Jordan Renan, who covers the team for ESPN. The Bengals Booth Podcast is presented by Bud Light Seltzer. Refresh the game. And here's a quick reminder that you can have the latest edition of this podcast delivered right to your phone, tablet, or computer by subscribing on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, or Podbean. It's the greatest thing since. Essential and frontline workers. On a previous podcast, I mentioned that during the COVID-19 pandemic, I've tried to keep two words in mind, careful and hopeful. And on this Thanksgiving, I'm adding grateful to our everyday heroes who have been there for us during this crisis. Doctors, nurses, and other healthcare workers, police, firefighters, and other first responders, teachers, grocery store employees, delivery people, news broadcasters. The list goes on and on. Thank you. And here's hoping that the end of this pandemic is in sight. Now, let's get to my Turkey Day conversation with Dave Lapham. Lap, the Ryan Finley era might have been short-lived. At 8 a.m. on Wednesday, Mike Garafolo from the NFL Network broke the news that the Bengals starting quarterback on Sunday will be third stringer Brandon Allen instead of Ryan Finley. Zach Taylor would not confirm that when asked about it on Wednesday. But in any case, Brandon Allen just promoted from the practice squad where he has been all year. He started three games for Denver last year, winning one with a passer rating of 68.3. He's had very few practice reps this year, but he was with the Rams in 2017 and 2018, so he knows Zach Taylor's offense. Here's offensive coordinator Brian Callahan.
Part of the reason we signed Brandon is because he's got some familiarity with the system. He's played, he played in games in Denver last year for a three-game stretch and won one of them. And he's been around for a little bit. He's got a good way about him. And so he really was, kind of our COVID quarterback in a sense, just the guy that we had to kind of have in the building and keep bringing along to start. And he's done a really nice job for what everything he's been asked to do. But yeah, I mean, he's in the same boat really as Ryan. I mean, neither one of them got a ton of reps as the season has gone along. And that's just the nature of being a backup quarterback.
If Brandon Allen is in fact the starter on Sunday, what do you think that means?
I think it means that the coaches have, a strong comfort level with him. Zach Taylor has some experience with him. Brian Callahan knows him, likes his approach. And that's about as big as anything, I think, is which guy do you think the team is going to rally around most? Which guy has the more it factor in his personality that is going to lift everybody and make everybody play to a higher level? I think those are all considerations. And those three starts in Denver, he beat the Cleveland Browns 26-10. Minnesota's up by 4 points. He takes on a drive late in the football game. A back shoulder pass to his tight end goes off the tight end's face mask. Should have won that football game. And then they went to Buffalo. And as you know, Dan, Buffalo with that crowd, that's a tough place to play. Didn't win that one, but went 1-2, should have gone and could have gone 2-1. So moved the football, had some success. And I think the feeling is that that he understands the offense and understands what defenses are trying to do to take away his offense, maybe at a little bit higher level than Ryan Finley right now.
Some people are making a big deal out of the fact that he's on the practice squad and Ryan Finley was on the roster. This year, that is virtually insignificant because the rules have changed to allow you to bring up practice squad guys every week anyway. It might have simply been a matter of the Bengals saying, hey, we think other NFL teams are more likely to try to take away Ryan Finley if they had a high draft grade on him last year, if he were on the practice squad, then they are likely to take away Brandon Allen.
I agree with you, Dan. And look at the guy that's come off the practice squad in their last three games that's given them a boost in their offensive line, Spain. You know, as you said, the rules and everything are so different this season. He lines up at left guard against Tennessee. They win the football game. They don't give up a sack. They don't turn the football over. Then he goes against the Pittsburgh Steelers at right tackle. Acquits himself very well. And then last week, of course, against Washington, he goes and plays the right guard position, you know, very well. So where would they be without Quentin Spain? You know, and he's been coming off the practice squad for three games, and now they've activated him to the roster. But that's another good example of this year is different. There's no question about it. 2020 is different in every way it can be.
I want to get back to Quentin Spain in just a little bit, but first I want to talk about Joe Burrow. The loss of Joe was obviously a gut punch to everybody in the organization. He is expected to make a full recovery and return to action next year, although it might not be in time for week one. He's been at the stadium this week. In typical Joe Burrow fashion, he's been lifting the spirits of his teammates instead of the other way around. CJ Uzama tore his Achilles back in week two, so he is likely to rehab with Burrow in the offseason. Listen to what he had to say about seeing Burrow in the training room.
Today, I saw him in there, and he seems high-spirited, and he was asking a bunch of questions about, like, hey, can I do this? Hey, can I do this? Hey, can if I try to flex this right now, is that okay? And the trainer, Nick, was like, yes. Like, does that not hurt? And he's like, no, it feels a lot better already today. And I was doing the rest of my rehab and finishing up, and Nick came, you know, to help me out. And he was like, that guy's a beast. Like, that's insane that his pain tolerance has to be ridiculous for that. So hearing that in and of itself, I'm like, yo, hold up. Let's crank up my rehab real quick, man. Like, come on. Like, what are we doing here? I don't feel anything either. Come on. Push me a little harder. But no, I think it's good. You know, obviously traveling restrictions, I'm going to be pretty much planted here throughout the entire offseason, which I'm fine with. And now, yeah, that's another kind of person I can work out with, train with. I have my quarterback here, so when he's on his feet, you know, I'm gonna say, hey, yeah, it's time to throw, buddy. Like, let's go. And I know he's gonna be as eager to get back out there. So yeah, I think, you know, that's probably the only positive of his injury is, you know, I get to rehab with my guy.
Lap, we are doctors, but I have no doubt that Burrow is going to attack rehab as much as humanly possible and be back as soon as possible.
I agree with you. I did see CJ going into his rehab Tuesday morning before he walked in there into the locker room, and he was walking well, Dan, and he told me he's a good week, 2 weeks ahead of schedule as of right now. So that could continue to progress in a positive way, and to have a rehab partner is significant. And I do think you're right. I think Joe Burrow, not only a five-star recruit, but a five-star rehab guy, he's going to be one of those guys that attacks it. And the thing that you're going to have to be careful of with him, sometimes you can do too much. So there's that balancing act. They're not going to have to light a firecracker or a cherry bomb under Joe Burrow to get him to work. They're going to have to put a harness on him to pull him back, I think, a little bit, to make sure that he doesn't overdo it, particularly in the early stages, and have a setback. That's the worst word you can hear during a rehab process is, oh, he experienced a setback. Don't want to hear that. So there is a point of diminishing returns. And I think he's smart enough to understand that and figure it out. But I agree with you. I think if anything, he's going to come back early and he's going to come back ready. And you can't compare injuries, but Carson Palmer tore the ACL and MCL and dislocated his patella. And he did it in January in a playoff game. And he played in the third preseason game that following preseason in August. He played in the Pro Bowl and won MVP. So, you know, if that's a barometer, Joe Burrow should be in pretty good shape. The thing about it too, Dan, is he's young. He's in tremendous condition. So the healing process should be pretty darn strong.
Another comparison is Houston quarterback Deshaun Watson. He tore his ACL almost at the exact same point in his rookie year, November of his rookie year. He was back in time to start the season opener the next season and went to the Pro Bowl that year and the following year.
I just want to say, you know, prayers out to Joe Burrow and his family and just him and his team, Cincinnati Bengals. I mean, that's just a tough situation. I watched the play and it was just fast emotion, and you know, that just kind of pitched things in perspective where, you know, it can be any play. So you just got to be grateful for the position you're in, but, you know, sending my best wishes and prayers out to him and his family. And if he got any questions, you know, I dealt with the same thing my rookie year around similar time, you know, kind of November-ish. You know, he can always reach out to me and I can reach out to him. So yeah, prayers out to him, you know, hopefully speedy recovery. But I would just say, you know, when I came back, it was just definitely making sure that I was, you know, 100%. And I was really, really comfortable, especially at this level where everything is flying around. But, you know, once you're out there, you just got to play. You just got to play full throttle. You know, that's the part of the game. You kind of know what situation is going to happen. And, you know, for me, when my situation, when I did it in practice, I didn't know it was going to happen. And it happened. And when I came back, I was still, you know, I kind of started off, you know, a little shaky, but once after the first couple plays, you know, I was just like, hey, I got to cut it loose. If not, then I'm going to be a, you know, I'm going to be a burden for the team. And then for myself too, I'm going to be able to play, you know, my full potential.
What does Joe Burrow lose from missing the last six games of this season and the offseason program?
Yeah, obviously loses those reps. And I was excited to see the rematch against Pittsburgh and Baltimore, because Joe Burrow always learns from his mistakes. He doesn't make the same mistake twice. I think that's a big thing that has put him on a straight up arrow in terms of his career. He's a quick learner, a quick study, and doesn't fall into any bad habits and make mistakes over and over and over again. So he was disappointed in his performance after both of those football games. And you know how much of a grinder he is. He's probably going to grind even more before those football games. And I was looking forward to the rematches, both, you know, in Cincinnati, one of them on Monday night, one of them to finish the season and see how far he has progressed. So I think that's a little bit of a disappointment. I'm sure it's a disappointment to him. And then all the reps. I mean, every rep that you accumulate is a positive, you know, in your rookie year. Now, he did get 10 games of reps in. There's no question. And he got those 10 games of reps in the crazy year of 2020, where there were no OTAs, no mini camps, all those kind of things, which he'll miss probably this year as well coming up. So he's at least got a track record of showing I can perform at a high level without that. But it would have been good for him to have an offseason of, you know, working with his teammates, mini camps, OTAs, training camp, preseason games. How much of that will he be able to experience? That's the big question. That's the million-dollar question right now. But he has shown that he can perform extremely well, even void of all that.
It hurts the receiving core too, right? They won't have all those off-season reps to work on timing.
No doubt about it. It's you know, guys like Tyler Boyd, you know, and others, T. Higgins. I mean, they've found a nice little rhythm and with Joe Burrow. But you can always improve on it. And then other receivers that are just in the infancy stages of that, it'll hurt them. There's no doubt, Dan. And so how much will it retard the development of Joe Burrow? I think he is so special in so many areas that it will be hurtful, but not absolutely devastating in terms of his development.
People have been playing the blame game since Joe's injury. Some say the Bengals should have played a veteran quarterback early this year behind a shaky offensive line. Others say they shouldn't have passed so much. The most common criticism is that the Bengals have neglected their offensive line for too long. And that's what I want to discuss, because the biggest problem, at least in my view, that has hampered this franchise isn't that they've neglected the offensive line. It's that their many attempts to fix it have not worked out. Three of their five number one draft picks before Joe Burrow were offensive linemen, Cedric Oboihe, Billy Price, and Jonah Williams. Only one of those guys is starting right now. They traded for Cordy Glenn, which was the equivalent of signing an expensive free agent. He had 3 years left on his huge deal. This would have been the final year of that, but he's out of the NFL. They signed Xavier Suafilo prior to this season. He got injured in week one. So not only has the line continued to struggle, but other positions have suffered because they've used high draft picks on the O-line that haven't necessarily panned out. So I guess the bottom line is they've got to do a deep dive into what's gone wrong and how to fix it going forward.
Agreed. With every single word of your analysis there, when the Bengals went to five straight playoffs, a club record, they hit it in the draft, pick after pick after pick, you know, not just first round, but all rounds, multiple rounds. But when you miss in that first rounder, like they have the ones you've described, when you miss on those, it's painful. There's a huge ripple effect, and there's ripple effect for years, not just that draft year. But if it doesn't pan out, you know, in a lot of times, first round picks don't really perform up to what you'd expect in the first year. But by year two or three, they're an integral part of the football team. And that is gone. That hasn't happened with a lot of these guys. So the ripple effect is, like you say, not only did the position that those guys were drafted in either stay flat or decline because of the ineffectiveness of the play of that pick, but other positions that you could have made a pick at aren't improved either. So when you miss with a pick that high, the ripple effect is tremendous, and it's tremendous for a number of years. And I think that's what the Bengals are still, you know, trying to steady themselves from at this point in time. And yeah, for whatever the process is, you need to take it apart, examine every portion of it, reassemble it, and go from there.
So they're likely to have a really high pick in the draft. Right now, they're number three in the draft order. We keep going back and forth in recent weeks when we've discussed this. Do you need a pass rusher, a defensive lineman? Do you need an offensive lineman? In light of the Joe Burrow injury, do you think best offensive lineman on the board now becomes the most likely scenario?
I think if the best offensive lineman on the board is better than the best pass rusher on the board, boom, make it right. You make that pick. Because I do think they're equally, you know, the needs are astronomical in both areas. So I think, you know, if the tackle from Oregon, for example, is better than whoever they've got as the best pass rusher on their board at the third pick of the draft, you go with this 6'6", 340-pound behemoth that's athletic and, you know, they project to be a superhero and everything that goes along with it. So. I would have no problem if they went with offense. If they had the third pick in the draft and they went in that direction, I'd have no issue with it whatsoever.
I want to get back to Quentin Spain, who you brought up earlier, because that's really the one offensive line move in recent months that's worked out extremely well. He's 29 years old. He was a free agent in October after being let go by Buffalo. Back in 2016, Pro Football Focus had him ranked as the number five guard overall in the NFL. Wow. His rankings have never been that high in his other seasons, but do you think they found a starting guard, a good starting guard that's going to be here for a few years?
I think they've found something for sure, Dan. I mean, he came into the league, he calls himself, you know, Mr. Undrafted, because he entered the draft thinking it would be a very high pick, maybe even a first round pick, and went undrafted. So he had a chip on his shoulder as big as a 2x4, massive chip. And he's used it to his advantage. And I like everything about the guy. I mean, he's massive, you know, 6'5", 330 pounds plus, depending on what he has for pregame meal. And he's one of those guys that has an edge to him. You know, he's got that streak about him where you have to, he's probably a heck of a guy off the football field, but on the football field, and I'm aware of what you have to do, you have to flip the switch and you have to become somebody that you can't be walking the streets. You know, I mean, that's the way you have to play the game. And he plays it that way. The other thing about him is not just his mindset and his physicality and the edge that he brings to the football team, the toughness. He is unbelievably football aware. He sees the big picture. He's not a tunnel vision guy. It's not like, okay, well, they have me playing left guard against Tennessee, so I'm going to just understand at that left guard. He sees the entire defense. He understands how the offense is trying to attack it with blocking schemes up front. And he just, if he pulls he knows the center is blocking back, the tackle's blocking down, the back is filling. He knows what's going on. If he pulls, you know, it's not just, I'm going to pull, I'm going to hit this guy. What else is happening? When I pull, who's got my guy? If this guy that I'm supposed to block stunts, who else do I get? I mean, he gets football. He is football aware. And I think that that has allowed him to play left guard, right tackle, and right guard in his three games with the Cincinnati Bengals to date. He is one of the big picture guys, and to boot, he can play. So he gives you position versatility, and that's tremendously valuable. Instead of carrying eight offensive linemen with Quentin Spain, you can carry seven. Instead of carrying nine, you can carry eight. I mean, it just gives you that that dimension where he's shown he can play both guards and both tackles. I don't know about center, but he's shown he can play the guard and tackle position on either side.
For most of his NFL career, he's been a left guard. That's obviously the spot that Michael Jordan is playing in Cincinnati. And the Bengals had high hopes that Michael would take a big step forward this year in his second year in the NFL and eventually be a really good guard. Where do you see him at this stage of his development?
Unfortunately, still a little too inconsistent. You know, you can pull tape where it's like, whoa. I mean, he did some things against the Indianapolis Colts. He had a much better day against Cameron Hayward this year, even though it didn't go well for the team. His individual matchup was light years better than it was his rookie year, where he was just decimated by Cam Hayward, and it basically got him benched, you know, sit back and look for a little while and readdress everything. So, I mean, there are games like that. And then there are times where, you know, he lapses a little bit and doesn't play to that level. So I think just like any young player, you have to realize that it can't be just some of the time. It has to be all the time. You have to be very, very consistent with your approach and your execution to it. And nobody feels worse about Joe Burrow's injury, I can tell you for a fact, than Michael Jordan. And one of the things that, you know, you can claim, I mean, he got bear hugged. Defensive tackle bear hugged him and walked him back. Defensive tackle's not supposed to be able to hold like that either. I mean, you could have called. Who cares about a penalty, though, if the end result is your quarterback gets his knee shredded? And at that point, the reason it happened is Michael's pad level was too high. And he's a big, strapping, strong, long guy. Got to keep the pad level down. That's a big factor for him. When he has issues, in my mind, it's because that's one of the biggest things, is his pad level is too high. So he has to consistently work to play at a lower level.
All right, let's turn to the final 6 weeks. Whether it is Brandon Allen or Ryan Finley at quarterback, chances are the Bengals are not going to be scoring 30 points a game. So to win games from here on in, the defense is going to have to play great. It's currently 22nd in the NFL in points allowed, 27 points per game. Here is safety Jesse Bates.
You know, with Joe being hurt, yes, we're going to have an opportunity at the quarterback spot for, you know, whether it's Finley or whoever it is, you know, to make an impact. But the standard for the defense just has to raise 10 times more, with, you know, that part being out. And it's something that's not, you know, a secret, something that we got to address in the room. You know, we're going to win games because of our defense, these next couple weeks. So very excited for the challenge.
Lap, this week they face the Giants. Giants are not a good offensive team. They're 30th in scoring. They're 30th in yards. They are next to last in sacks allowed per passing play. This is an opportunity, at least in the first game post Joe Burrow, for the defense to carry the Bengals to a win.
It is. And, you know, Jones is a turnover machine. You know, in 23 starts, he's got like 35 giveaways in terms of lost fumbles and interceptions. He fumbled the ball 18 times last year and lost 11 of them. So that's, you know, that's if a guy has a reputation for that kind of thing, you have to try to separate him from the football and others. One of the biggest things that the defense has to work on, Dan, is forcing fumbles. They've only forced four, fewest in the NFL. They've recovered one, tied for fewest in the National Football League. So the suddenness, fumbles occur when a player is, you know, protecting the ball, but he sees somebody and he's trying to protect the ball from one guy, and in comes another, puts his helmet right in the ball, and he never sees him coming. And the suddenness of that is too much for the player to counter. So the Bengals are going to have to do more of that type of thing. One guy set it up, another guy come in for the kill shot to cost the turnover. And they're going to have to do a lot more of that. They're going to have to separate players from the football, whether it's separating from an incompletion, separating for a ball that goes airborne, like the, you know, tipped interception off of Marcus Hunt's face mask, or a tip ball at the line of scrimmage from a defensive lineman, or, and not just in defense, but special teams. You know, the defense and special teams have to think not only special teams establishing field position, but score. You know, maybe get a return, take a return back to the house, punt or kickoff return. Maybe you force a fumble on a return of the opposition, give a short field. Defensively, force a fumble, get a short field, get an interception, get a pick six, pick a phone bump and score. You know, you don't necessarily play every snap to try to do that, because it'll distort what you're really trying to do. You have to make sure you do your job, but try to get more involved from a gang perspective, more guys involved in around the football. As the old saying goes, and I believe in it 100,000%, you see it over and over again. When you run to the football as the defensive football team, good things happen. And they're going to have to create some good things and make good things happen to, you know, the worst thing that you can have happen is whoever's at quarterback, even Joe Burrow, not start his own 5-yard line, 10-yard line, inside the 20 and have to drive long field. You have to give them positive field position and put the other team on the long field. You have to play long field for the opposition, short field for your football team. However that occurs, you're going to have to do everything you possibly can to support who's playing quarterback, because even with the excellence of Joe Burrow at quarterback, the team was 2-7-1.
Did you play a lot of Thanksgiving Day football in your childhood?
I did. Out on the front lawn, we were doing that left and right. I have two brothers, had a lot of boys in the neighborhood, and we played quite a bit of football. We played tackle football without pads, you know, out at old Daggers Field, man. We'd go to Daggers Field, and appropriately named. Mr. Dagger had a big farm, and he let us use a part of it to play all kinds of sports, you know, out there. And it was great, man. Those were great memories.
All right. Well, I hope you have a fantastic Thanksgiving Day. My best to Lynn and your family. Crush that meal. All right.
I will. You do the same, Dan. Same to Peg and yours. And I'm telling you, let's have the happiest Thanksgiving we've ever had, because this year is crazy. It's different, but there's still a lot of things to be thankful for, and families first and foremost. You too. See you, Dan.
The Bengals Booth podcast is presented by Bud Light Seltzer. It's light and refreshing with a hint of fruit flavor. Now time for this week's one-on-one player interview. This week, I caught up with tight end CJ Uzomah. We heard a small snippet of that interview earlier. CJ caught Joe Burrow's first NFL touchdown pass in week 2 against Cleveland before suffering a season-ending injury the same night. CJ, it's been a little bit more than 2 months since you tore your Achilles. How are your spirits, and what are you able to do in terms of rehab at this point?
Spirits are where they are for, you know, considering I have an injury and I'm not able to be out there with the boys and, you know, helping the team fight for wins. So it is where it is with that. But in terms of rehab, I think I'm pretty ahead of schedule. I am out of the boot. I'm walking a fair amount. I just got a puppy, so I'm walking him a lot, and that's good rehab, they said. So it's good that he's kind of a handful. I'm doing pool workouts and a bunch of different exercises. I actually have a call with the doctor here in 2-3 weeks just so he can kind of see and monitor a session. And I've talked to him a little bit, and the trainers and he seemed very optimistic about, you know, the direction I'm headed in and how kind of ahead of schedule I am.
What kind of puppy, and what did you name him or her?
So I got a Saint Berdoodle, and I got him because he's hypoallergenic, and I named him Appa. And I'm actually going to get him a little brother or sister, or a brother or sister soon, because I'm going to adopt one as well, just so he has kind of someone to hang out with while I'm out doing rehab and working out.
Was the Uzomah family a dog family? Did you have dogs growing up?
No, I didn't have one dog. I didn't have a pet. I had like a turtle and some fish, and that was it. That was all I had growing up. My parents are really, you know, keen on not no having no hair in the house and no fur and all this other stuff. So first like pet that I'm having to actually take care of. And he's been good so far. He's been good. He's growing like crazy, but he's been really good.
I'm sure you will enjoy it. We're visiting with CJ Uzomah. Back in your rookie year, CJ, you were teammates with Leon Hall, who tore his Achilles twice and made a complete comeback both times. Do you draw inspiration from him or anybody else that's overcome this injury?
Yeah, I mean, looking at it now, I know KD is battling this as well. And like you said, Leon with his and Nick, you know, our training staff is great. Nick was like, you're going to be completely fine. Like this is back in the day, this is something that, you know, people were more worried about because of what they were doing. But with what's been going on in modern med, you'll be fine. You'll be completely fine. So, and then even seeing, you know, I'm a huge Chelsea fan. So even seeing some of the players last year, you know, had a similar injury, and I've watched them on the pitch tonight or today in the Champions League. So one of them was out there, and he actually scored a goal. So yeah, I'm completely okay with how the process is going, and I'm expected to be 110% by the time I come out of this.
Sadly, you were joined on the injured list this week by Joe Burrow. You are always positive, but how hard did that one hit you?
Yeah, that hurts. You know, that hurts because of kind of the person that he is off the bat and the leader that he is. And you can tell it's obvious he's a leader because we voted him captain and he's a rookie, you know? So that definitely, you know, kind of is gut-wrenching and, you know, hurts to see. Obviously, no matter what, it hurts to see one of your guys go down, but to see it's your quarterback, to see it's Joe, to see it's a leader and a captain of your team, all those things and the severity of it, you know, that definitely is a gut punch. And, you know, not being there is even 10 times worse. You know, I'm watching this on TV and I'm just like, man, I just want to, you know, give him some love, show him some love. And watching the guys one by one go up to him and tap him on the head and say, you know, say they're praying for him and things like that. You know, that's what it's all about. But yeah, it definitely, that's a tough one.
I don't know how COVID restrictions could impact this, CJ, but do you envision the possibility of you and Joe helping to push each other through rehab?
Oh, 100%. I think today I saw him in there and he seems high-spirited and he was asking a bunch of questions about like, hey, can I do this? Hey, can I do this? Hey, can, if I try to flex this right now, is that okay? And the trainer, Nick, was like, yes. Like, does that not hurt? And he's like, no, it feels a lot better already today. And I was doing the rest of my rehab and finishing up, and Nick came, you know, to help me out. And he was like, that guy's a beast. Like, that's insane that his pain tolerance has to be ridiculous for that. So hearing that in and of itself, I'm like, yo, hold up. Let's crank up my rehab real quick, man. Like, come on. Like, what are we doing here? I don't feel anything either. Come on. Push me a little harder. But no, I think it's good. You know, obviously traveling restrictions, I'm going to be pretty much planted here throughout the entire off season, which I'm fine with. And now, yeah, that's another kind of person I can work out with, train with. I have my quarterback here. So when he's on his feet, you know, I'm going to say, hey, yeah, it's time to throw, buddy. Like, let's go. And I know he's going to be as eager to get back out there. So, yeah, I think, you know, that's probably the only positive of his injury is, you know, I get to rehab with my guy.
A couple more questions for CJ Uzomah. Immediately after your injury, you were back in the building going through team meetings, much to the surprise of your buddy Giovanni Bernard. Mm-hmm. Why has that been so important to you?
Yeah, and I think, you know, it's been tougher now with all these things that are going on and, you know, Zoom, when not to Zoom, when we're on, you know, when people can come into the building, it's crazy. But, yeah, I don't know. I just thinking about our team and how really we're a young team, you know, when I think about it, and especially at the tight end position, I'm the oldest guy in there, which is super weird to me still. I just feel like it's good to, you know, let everyone know that one, I'm back next year. Like I expect to make a full recovery. So I want to know everything that's going on, but two, just give any guidance to anybody that has a question, or, you know, just make my presence known, say something, go in, you know, the toughest part is not being able to, you know, congratulate someone when they make a good play or something. Right. So I'm watching film, I'm seeing catches that are made. I'm going up to people, I'm texting people like, hey, I saw you, man. That was nice. I see you out there and things like that. So, you know, these are guys that, you know, I spend majority of my life with. I get to like see for Thanksgiving, maybe, or Christmas, things like that. But other than that, I'm planted here, and, you know, these are my brothers. So I have that connection with them. I want to be a part of, you know, any success that we have, and, you know, all the failures that we have. I'm a part of this team, and I kind of just want everyone to know that, you know, I'm here if they need anything.
Last thing for CJ Uzomah. I know you would rather be playing, but the injury has given you some time that you otherwise wouldn't have, allowing you, among other things, to make an appearance recently on the London is Blue podcast for fans of Chelsea's Premier League soccer club. Tell me about that opportunity.
That was awesome. They had reached out to me a while ago too, actually, and we just weren't able to ever, you know, get on schedule with it. And being able to talk about Chelsea and you know, get in touch with people that love Chelsea as much as I do and want to go over and watch matches, and it was awesome. You know, those guys are, you know, Nick, Brandon, Dan, they're all awesome guys, and you know, they're like, hey, if we can get you back on the show, I'm like, hey, I'll definitely be back. With, you know, hopefully traveling permitted and rehab permitted, I can go over to a match with them. And it was good. It was good banter that we had. And I was probably one of my favorite interviews. I've had too many with you to count, but
no offense taken.
It was fun to be able to kind of talk soccer as well. You know, talking about football is something that I love doing, because, you know, I've been doing it since I was six, but being able to talk about another sport that I have, you know, great admiration for is something that I'll always enjoy.
Well, look out for Leicester City, because my beloved Foxes are looking really good this year.
They are looking good. I'd say it's between, for me right now, it's between Chelsea, Leicester, and then I don't want to say this team at all, but Tottenham is also putting on a strong campaign, so we'll see how it finishes.
Great to catch up with you, CJ. Continued good fortune with the rehab, and we look forward to seeing you back on the field soon.
Awesome. Thank you very much.
Now time for our Know the Foe segment. The New York Giants are 3-7. That means they're a half game better than the Bengals, but it also means they're only a half game behind the first-place Eagles in the NFC East. Jordan Renan covers the Giants for ESPN and joined Lapp and Wayne Box Miller this week on the Bengals Game Plan Show.
I didn't even hear that. Yeah, they're 3-7. They got two in a row. They're right in the middle of that division.
Right in the thick of it. Yes, sir. Right. Everybody's got three.
I mean, yeah, think about it. You put them in, like, the, you know, the AFC North, they're like, their season's over.
Exactly.
Like, you know, four back, basically.
Yeah, exactly. I looked at the, you know, the conference, and I said 11 of the 12 teams outside of that division would be in first place if they were in the NFC East. Let's put that in perspective.
That's just crazy. It's very 2020, though. That's very apropos.
Right.
There's
right.
No doubt.
Speaking of apropos, this team has been in, you know, outside the San Francisco 49er game and maybe the end of the Steeler game, they've been in every game that they played.
Yeah, I mean, that's the one thing you look at this team, and I think that's why people, and I'm on board with this as well. You see progress from Joe Judge, the new first-year head coach, and the program he's building. I mean, they not only have they been in all their games, they really should have won. And I'm not somebody who sits there and say, you know, it makes excuses that you should win, but they blew two games big time. Like, you know, games that they absolutely 100% should have won. So, yeah, the Giants could easily be 5-5 right now. I mean, I don't think that's out of the question. Easily, you know, 4-6 definitely should be like their minimum. So, yeah, this is a team that has shown good flashes. I mean, they're not explosive offensively. I think right now, as it stands, there's two teams that have scored less points than them, and that is the Bears and the Jets. But yet the Giants have still managed to stay in a bunch of games and lead a lot of games late. And now they claim they're just finally figuring out how to win games and how to finish, and that's the difference here in these last few weeks.
And that speaks to the Giants' defense. I think a lot of people think that the Giants may have the best defense in the NFC East overall. I mean, they're sixth in the league in rushing.
Yeah.
And they're only allowing 4 yards a carry, which is eighth best in the league. So, you know, they stop the run and then kind of go from there. And is it that? Is their defense, keeping them in a lot of football games?
Yeah, I mean, their defense has been consistently competitive. And for a while, I was on the board with, teams that could pass the ball and sling it around the yard could still be very successful against them. They have some warts on defense. They have trouble in the slot. They have trouble with their second cornerback. And, you know, the reality is this is going to be like their fifth. I think this is their fifth backup quarterback they're basically playing this year. But so you thought, okay, once they start playing some real quarterbacks, they'll get torn apart. But then they went against Tom Brady, and they held their own. Tom Brady was out of sorts that whole first half.
Yeah.
Carson Wentz, even though I know he's been shaky / bad this year, they did a really good job against him in their last game. So, yeah, the defense has managed to go from a unit that has been really bad the last couple of years to, okay, they're about middle of the road now, somewhere around there. They're really good against the run, but if you want to exploit them, you can have some success against the pass. And really, that's going to be the question here. Can the Bengals be successful in the pass game? They have a lot of receivers that is a good matchup against some of the Giants' cornerbacks and defensive backs. But can they take advantage of that with Brandon Allen at quarterback and with the Giants, feeling better about themselves lately?
You know, when I look at the game against the Philadelphia Eagles and you had 13 quarterback hits and Leonard Williams had 5 of those, going up against a quarterback that doesn't have the experience this coming week, I got to believe that that's an area that they're really going to be paying attention to.
Yeah, I mean, look, that's where the Giants don't have a great pass rusher, right? They don't have an edge rusher that's going to scare you.
Mm-hmm.
Where they can have some success, their best pass rusher is probably Leonard Williams. So the Eagles' problem this year has been at the guard position, up the middle. And so that's where they were able to exploit Philadelphia. That's where the matchup here for the Giants, they could probably have some success there as well. So Leonard Williams is kind of the guy as the pass rusher. He leads the team with 5 sacks that you need to keep an eye on because he's the only one in there. It's not like they have multiple guys. He's the only one in there on that interior that's really going to threaten you and scare you in regards to pass rush. Like, they're good against the run. They're stout against the run in there. Leonard Williams is the guy as the pass rusher from the interior that if you're the Bengals, you say, okay, we need to make sure if we can limit this guy, if we can stop this guy. And Leonard Williams, to be quite honest, he's been a guy who's been up and down most of his career. He hasn't been consistently dominant, even though he was a really high pick by the Jets. If they can limit him, they should be able to give Brandon Allen enough time if he's able to read the defense correctly. And that's another thing the Giants have done really well. Patrick Graham, he was with the Dolphins last year. He knows Joe Judge from New England.
Mm-hmm.
He has done a really good job, and the Giants have done a really good job. They're going to show Brandon Allen looks that he's probably never seen before.
Yeah.
I mean, they're going to show him every look you can imagine. That's what they do anyway on a regular basis. They're extremely multiple. They're going to show everything and try to confuse the heck out of him.
Yeah, he's got that New England pedigree, 3-4 base, but they'll morph into just about everything and anything. And from one week to the next, they look like a different different football team, a different scheme and philosophy. One thing
they're not shy about admitting that either. They're a defense that is they're going to do whatever is the best matchup for that week. They're totally matchup based.
Right, right. And that's you have to have versatile players, smart players, just like the Patriots over the years have had players that can, morph into different responsibilities and roles, and that's what they're starting to do a good job of with the New York Giants. One thing that is very obvious, last year, minus 17 in the turnover department. I mean, they just gave games away, worse than the National Football League. This year it's dead even. They 15 takes, 15 gives. They're protecting the football better. And I'm looking at their defense. They forced 16 fumbles, tied for second most in the league, and they've recovered seven of them, tied for seventh. And the Bengals, on the other hand, have only forced four fumbles, dead last in the league, only recovered one, tied for the fewest. So the Giants are showing themselves to be a lot more sudden, you know, in really separating people from the football. Has that been real evident?
Yeah, you know what's funny? You mentioned those numbers, and I didn't even realize they're at even, because the Giants early in the season, I mean, Daniel Jones was turning it over like nothing early in the season. Like, that's kind of been his MO for most of the time he's been a starter. But these past 2 weeks, Daniel Jones, he started now 21 games. He has three games that he hasn't committed a turnover. Wow. Two of them have been the last 2 weeks. The Giants forced five turnovers against Washington 2 games ago. And I think we're +2 last week. So they're basically +7 in the last 2 weeks alone. So they were -7 up until two games ago. Not 2 weeks ago, because they were coming off a bye week.
Right.
So this has really been the difference. If they can limit those turnovers, that's when this Giants team, they can win games. If Daniel Jones is the one committing the turnovers, because like you said, the defense, they do enough to confuse the opponent that they're able to commit turnovers. They've been able to force a lot of fumbles, and they've also been able to, you know, create looks where their defensive backs get opportunities to make plays. And that's, you know, again, back to that New England point of view. If you look back at the history of Bill Belichick in New England, where obviously Joe Judge comes from,
right?
Look at their positive and negatives in turnovers.
Yep.
I mean, in fumbles alone.
Yep.
I mean, it's incredible how many more fumbles, and that's part of what they teach, right? I mean, the fumbles that they cause compared to the fumbles that they give up is just incredible in their favor. And this Giants team has sort of morphed into that as well, as long as they can keep Daniel Jones from fumbling the football and turning it over himself.
To put an exclamation point on what you're talking about, last year he started 13 games, fumbled it 18 times, led the league. Lost 11 of them.
Yeah, it's a crazy number.
Yeah, lost 11 of them. Had 12 interceptions. Had 23 giveaways in 13 games. That's a turnover machine. And then you add this year's numbers to it. So now it's 23 total games. Has 25 fumbles. Lost 15 of them. And he's also got 21 interceptions. 36 turnovers in 23 games. Like you said, the last couple of weeks, it's gotten better. But, man, he's given teams a lot of opportunity. But in talking about him, he's the leading rusher by well over 100 yards. Jones is.
Yeah.
So, I mean, what the heck's going on there? And I guess that 11-on-11, him running the football, 11-on-11 football becomes difficult for defenses, I guess.
Yeah, there's a few reasons for that. Number one is he's sneaky fast, okay?
Yeah.
He's a really good athlete, and teams don't think he's going to pull it on that, read option.
Yep.
And he has, and he's turned it into some really big plays. So you have to be disciplined when you play against this Giants offense, because he is a threat running the football. But part of the reason I think it's been such a success is because nobody was really expecting to see it much, right? The Giants had Saquon Barkley. He was their running game.
Yep.
But then they lose Saquon Barkley. They're kind of, you know, going through running backs that can't settle on one. You know, Devontae Freeman was their starting running back for a couple weeks.
Yeah.
Deion Lewis was getting a lot of playing time. But now they finally settled in. Now Wayne Gallman is that guy. He's going to be their main ball carrier in this game.
Right.
So he's had success in recent weeks. So even though he might not be the leading rusher on the team, he's the guy you have to stop as a rusher. And then Daniel Jones is a guy you have to be disciplined, because if you don't, if you sleep on him, he can turn that into a big play, and it's been a big part of the Giants' offense. They've needed to find ways to make explosive plays. Because when you look at – if you're the Bengals and you enter this game, you say, well, Evan Ingram's a pretty good tight end, but he's had a down year. He's not a great player. Sterling Shepard, quality player. Golden Tate, quality player, but at the end of his career, running back, no one in the Giants. Wayne Gallman's their main guy, but he doesn't – they don't have that guy that scares opposing defensive coordinators and keeps them up at night. So the Giants have had to find ways to make explosive plays.
Mm-hmm.
One of the ways they found was, hey, let's get Daniel Jones in that read option, have him keep the ball, and we can make big plays out of that. And it's worked. It's definitely worked, as you can tell by those numbers.
Yep.
Our guest, Jordan Renan from ESPN, covers the Giants. And, you know, do you know if people were surprised about his speed? I mean, obviously you guys scouted him and looked at the things that he did well, but do you think the league was pretty much sleeping on his speed? Because a couple of those runs, I know he had a 30-plus yard run against the Eagles and then the big run against
80.
Yeah, 80. And I think people were like, wait a minute, I didn't know this guy had that in the quality box.
Yeah, no, you know what? I don't think anybody really knew he had this because you look at, like, the next-gen speeds. I mean, he's at the 22-mile-per-hour range, wow. 21, 22 miles per hour. I mean, you're talking about, like, with cornerbacks. There's very few guys. I mean, Saquon Barkley barely hit 22 miles per hour very often. Yep. It's hard to do. Number one, well, I understand in part it was because you have to get a really long running start. Like, no, guys don't hit 22 miles per hour in a 10-yard stretch, right?
Sure, sure.
But still, for him to get to those speeds, I was surprised, and I knew he was a good athlete. So, I mean, you kind of realized he was a good athlete, but you didn't realize when he gets a running start and full speed and gets going that he can kind of kick it up to that gear. And what's funny about that is, in a way, is maybe he didn't know it either. He didn't realize he was trying to go faster. And then that's when the turf monster came out
right.
in that play against the Eagles where he kind of, you know, even he had a laugh about it afterwards because, you know, that was one right in front of the whole nation to see him to just fall on his face. But they also saw, and I think that should have opened eyes. That's why the Eagles, if you're the Eagles, you should be slapping yourselves. Like, to let it happen again after that happened to you the first time and you saw how fast he was.
Right.
Then in this last game, to allow him to run for a touchdown, he should have run for another touchdown if it was a callback for penalty.
Sometimes you run faster than you can, right? he took him to the ground. I guess
I do it all the time. In my head, I'm running really
fast. I hear you.
And I see it on, like, a video camera, like, oh, my God, I'm old and slow. What the heck is that?
I hear you. Question would be, with the read option, has he done a good job with RPO, you know, putting the pass into a little play action off of that read option, have an RPO?
Yeah, you know, that's a wrinkle we haven't seen very often. But
it's coming.
And you bring up a good point. I'm sitting here thinking, all right, at some point, you have to figure that's when they're going to whip it out,
yep,
right?
Yep.
So it's coming.
Yep.
It's just a matter of when at this point in my mind. Okay, you know, he's already – once teams start really playing it and show that they're keying on it, that's when I think we're going to see – okay, here's the wrinkle of him actually throwing off it. You get the linebacker to freeze,
yep.
or, you know, come, or, you know, his eyes to come and charge in. And then that's when you can hit a big play down that middle of the field. So at some point, I do expect them to play off it. And, you know, this week, coming off the bye week, that could be a prime spot to do it.
Don't forget to tune in to the Bengals Pep Rally Show Friday from 3 to 6 on ESPN 1530. That's going to do it for this episode of the Bengals Booth Podcast brought to you by Bud Light Seltzer. Refresh the game. If you haven't done so already, please subscribe. And if you have a minute, give it a rating or share a comment. That helps more Bengals fans find this podcast. I'm Dan Hoard, and thank you for listening to the Bengals Booth Podcast.